It is Friday, October 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the European Union and Turkey agree on a plan to stem the flow of migrants to Europe.
They've reached the realization that Turkey really is key to solving this crisis, to trying to prevent so many people coming through.
U.S. President Barack Obama and South Korean President Park Geun-hye meet today at the White House for talks on a range of issues, and we hear about the country music nominees for the 2015 American Music Awards. It's all ahead. Well, the European Union has approved an action plan with Turkey. This is designed to ease the flow of migrants to Europe. I'm joined now on the line by Henry Ridgewell, who is reporting for VOA in London. Henry, what is this new plan designed to try to do? I mean, Europe has seen a huge amount of migration just within the last few months.
Yes, the biggest migration since the Second World War. We've seen close to 700,000 migrants arrive on European shores this year alone. And so I think the acuteness of the problem has been recognized by all European leaders, and they've reached the realization that Turkey really is key to solving this crisis, to trying to prevent so many people coming through. 600,000 of those migrants have come through Turkey, most of them over the Mediterranean Sea to the Greek islands. And so the idea behind Europe's plan is to aid Turkey and to encourage Turkey to stop those migrants from leaving, either by force, by preventing them from departing Turkey's shores, which would involve a greater patrolling, greater policing of that Turkish maritime border, or indeed persuading the migrants not to try to embark on the journey from those Syrian refugee camps on Turkey's border with Syria up towards Europe through financial encouragement, through making the conditions in those camps better for the refugees, and providing Turkey more financial aid so that it can deal with that humanitarian crisis on its borders. Europe has agreed to the deal, but the big hurdle still comes that Turkey has not yet agreed to the deal. It involves financial aid of around $3.5 billion, but Europe has not yet said exactly how it will come up with the money. The talks with Turkey are expected to continue over the coming days. German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who has really taken the lead on this issue for Europe, is traveling to Turkey this weekend to hold talks with the leadership there and try and reach finer agreements. But there are still many hurdles to overcome, not least whether Turkey will be able to stem that flow, whether it's possible with so many potential points of departure for the migrants, so many Greek islands along that border, and indeed whether they have the will and whether they trust Europe's offer in return of visa liberalization and renewed EU accession talks for Turkey.
Yeah, I mean, the talks about possibly Turkey joining the European Union, that's been going on for years, and, you know, it never seemed to be really resolved.
It has been going on, yes, for many years, for over a decade, and I think many people had put it on the back burner, really, because of the political mood in Europe at the moment against any further accession, and indeed this migrant crisis, I think, has pushed the political opinion in Europe the other way against any further expansion of the European Union and really for greater border control. So the prospect of renewed talks with Turkey is a very controversial one, and indeed President Recep Erdogan this morning has indicated that he does not really trust the European offer. He said that he doesn't believe their sincerity of renewed accession talks to Europe. So already within hours of the deal being approved by Europe, there's some hurdles to be overcome. And many of the experts I've spoken to on this issue say not only the immigration and the political issues will prevent any rapid EU accession talks for Turkey, but it's also the human rights issue. People have been looking at what's been happening in Turkey over the past few years under President Erdogan and previous to that Prime Minister Erdogan. And they say human rights have been rolled back, freedom of the press, women's rights, and so on. And so They don't want to trade these very basic fundamental values of the European Union to bring Turkey on board quickly to try and solve this crisis. So there is resistance on both sides.
All right. Thanks very much, Henry. That is Henry Ridgewell. I'm joined now by International Edition's Olin Akishologu. Olin, what has been the reaction?
Thank you, Sarah. Well, so far I saw a lot of negative reaction on social media directed towards the deal between the EU and Turkey. A lot of people are critical of Turkey's human rights record in recent years, referencing treatment of Kurds. I also read a lot of tweets from people questioning how the money will be spent. Some people also say Turkey deserves the support for how long they've been active in accepting the refugees, however. So we are seeing voices on both sides chime in.
What else is new on social media?
Right, so a little bit of social media news last night. Facebook is reporting a bug that shows everyone how many views your posts are getting. So, for example, if you posted a personal photo, you might actually be able to see the number of people who saw the post. Now, some people think it's a little creepy, but a lot of people seem to think that this bug is kind of a neat feature. Facebook is telling news organizations that it's aware of the problem and working to fix it. Another big trending topic is London Mayor Boris Johnson. Now, yesterday he was playing street rugby, which is also touch rugby, with a group of Japanese youths in Tokyo while on a trade relations trip, and he just completely barrels over a 10-year-old boy. And all of this was captured on photo and video, and it's just gone viral on Facebook. Luckily, the poor boy got up and was okay. He said, "I felt a little bit of pain, but it was okay." Lastly, in the town of North Pole, Alaska, a man named Santa Claus, who was just elected to city council. You can't make this stuff up. The man, formerly known as Thomas Patrick O'Connor, legally changed his name to Santa Claus in 2005 after playing Santa Claus for children for several years. And he really does have a long white beard. A lot of people on social media are saying, no, the world finally corrupted Santa and turned him into a politician.
Oh, no. Thanks very much, Olin. That's International Edition's Olin Akishologu. Well, as we've heard, Europe's migrant crisis continues. War refugees from Syria and Iraq, many young, skilled, and aspirational, are arriving in their thousands daily on European shores, represent an opportunity Europe should embrace rather than fear. That's argued by relief organizations and refugees themselves. Jamie Detmer has more for VOA News.
27-year-old Abdul Salem is like many young Syrians, frustrated and giving up on ever returning to his war-torn home country. He wants to finish his higher education, interrupted by the civil war, and to get on with his life. He's managed to scrape a living in Turkey, but jobs are in short supply.
After the Russian intervention, there is no solution. It's coming closer. And days are passing, and years are passing as well. So I've been waiting for 5 years and no hope in the horizon. So I decided to go to Europe to complete my studies and start having a new life there.
Originally from Jarablus, a town now occupied by Islamic State militants, he says he does not understand why Europeans don't appreciate that many of the refugees are skilled and educated and could benefit the countries that settled them.
If they are taking them when they are coming illegally, why they don't put some procedures and conditions and terms for them to go and apply in the embassies? And if they pass and they fulfill the conditions, they can go legally and have the visa.
He's not alone arguing for an orderly, proactive migration process for refugees, saving asylum seekers the perils of turbulent sea crossings and criminal smuggling rings. Nor is he alone in urging Europeans to view refugees as an opportunity, not a danger or burden. Benedict Dempsey is a policy director for the international relief organisation Mercy Corps.
It's certainly the case that Syria has been a very well-educated country, and so there are a large number of highly educated people who are leaving Syria and who, many of whom are now arriving in Europe.
He notes, though, across the refugee and migrant spectrum, whether from sub-Saharan Africa or Afghanistan, there's a high level of motivation and aspiration. Characteristics suggest these are not people looking for a handout or wanting to wage jihad in Europe. If properly integrated, these young refugees could be a resource to overcome a dire demographic threat to Europe, which has an aging population. More than one-fifth of Europeans will be 65 or older by 2025, and Europe will face a severe problem funding retirement benefits.
This should be seen as much as an opportunity as it is any kind of risk. The risk, such as it is, exists more in what will happen if people are excluded and marginalised.
He says even with additional international support for Syria's neighbours, refugees would still be looking to Europe, as there could not be enough jobs generated for them to make it worthwhile to stay in Syria's neighbouring countries and make lives in them.
The numbers of people that we're seeing in Turkey and Jordan and Lebanon and Iraq are so huge. With the best will in the world, even if people were able to work, and we do think they should be able to, even so, the numbers in those countries are so vast that there does have to be some support by resettling refugees into other countries.
And so for the foreseeable future, the refugee influx into Europe will continue apace. Jamie Detmer, VOA News, Gaziantep, Turkey.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Later this year, the 2.1-meter telescope at Arizona's Kitt Peak Observatory will be enhanced with an advanced optical device that will allow astronomers to gather incredibly detailed astronomical images. Called the RoboAO, the device is the world's first robotic laser-adaptive optics system. AO, short for adaptive optics, is a technology that improves image resolution by recognizing and correcting any visual distortion caused by atmospheric turbulence. The laser is an ultraviolet laser that projects an artificial guide star in the sky. The artificial guide star is used by the system to measure the actual amount of atmospheric blurring. These measurements are then fed into the Robo or robotic adaptive optics system that removes optical distortion and produces a much sharper image. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we hear about country music performers nominated for the American Music Awards. South Korean President Park Geun-hye is visiting the White House today for talks with U.S. President Barack Obama. I'm joined now by VOA's Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Patton, who is in Seoul. Brian, what are some of the top items to be on the agenda at the meetings between President Park and President Obama?
Number one, of course, is the North Korea nuclear threat. North Korea recently threatened to launch another ballistic missile. It didn't happen last week during its anniversary celebrations of its ruling party, but analysts say that it could just happened later. North Korean officials have also indicated that they may do another nuclear test in the near future. So President Park and President Obama will talk about their strategy of containment that they both pretty much adhere to and believe in, which is a strong defense to respond quickly and decisively to any sort of provocations and not to give in to these past patterns of North Korea creating a crisis through a provocation just so it can gain concessions. Both Seoul and Washington have been holding out for North Korea to make a real commitment to halt its nuclear program before it will start any new talks. I think what you'll see tomorrow is a reinforcement of that strategy and that policy.
In addition, the U.S. is concerned over South Korea's continuing friction with Japan. No doubt they will be discussing that as well.
Yes, that topic has kind of progressed significantly over the last couple of months. Japan has been trying to improve its military, and it has passed some new reforms in its National Assembly to give its military a little more latitude. But what has really given its neighbors, especially South Korea, concern is what it sees as it's retreating from some past promises of commitments towards its pacifist constitution and trying to reinterpret history. And for South Korea, the most important issue here is this issue of comfort women. There are thousands of women in Asia who had, during World War II, who had been forced into prostitution by the Japanese military. President Park, when she came to power, had demanded that Prime Minister Shinzo Abe make an explicit apology and to these comfort women, and he has not. And he has done everything but make an apology. He has voiced regret, and he has promised to uphold past apologies, but he did not make a specific apology. Now, what has changed is that President Park has backed off of that promise to not meet with him. She has said his promise to hold up and abide by past promises of Japanese officials, she will respect that as a way to move forward with the relationship. They're still trying to pressure Japan to make some sort of announcement, some sort of explicit apology, but there doesn't seem to be any pressure now on them to do so. Later this month, the Prime Minister of Japan, President Xi of China, and President Park will all meet in a trilateral summit. So that relationship is moving forward. There's still some contentiousness about it, but it is not as bad, as intense as it was, say, 3 months ago.
All right. Thanks very much, Brian. That's VOA's Northeast Asia correspondent, Brian Padden, reporting from Seoul. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Award season is upon us, and the Country Music Association Awards released their nominees about a month back. And just this week, the American Music Association announced their selection. VOA Music's Nikki Strong is here to weigh in on how country music fared. Well, Nikki, were there any surprises for country music in particular at the AMAs this year?
Yes, there were surprises. So aside from the basic country music categories like favorite male and female country artist of the year, country music had nominees in two other coveted categories, which was Artist of the Year and New Artist of the Year. Luke Bryan was nominated again this year for Artist of the Year, and Sam Hunt, who has the most, he's the country artist with the most nominations, he is up for New Artist of the Year. And last year, the AMAs did not have any country artist in that category. So I think it really speaks to his crossover appeal and success he's had this year.
Well, what do you think are the chances for Sam Hunt or Luke Bryan to win in either of those categories?
Well, the AMAs are determined by online voting. So right now there are 10 nominees for Artist of the Year, and that's going to be narrowed down to 5 on November 11th based on fan votes. So Luke Bryan was in the final list last year. Hopefully he will make it again this year. He's up against Taylor Swift, Ed Sheeran, Nicki Minaj, Sam Smith, to name a few, and they have ferocious social media followings. We all know how popular Taylor Swift is.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. And as far as Sam Hunt is concerned, like Luke Bryan, he has some pretty stiff competition. So he's going up against The Weeknd, who has made history on the charts, as well as the very popular group Walk the Moon and Tove Lo. So like Luke Bryan, his fans are really going to have to show up and vote, especially in light of The Weeknd's tremendous success this year.
Any word or rumor as to which country artist will be performing?
Ah, not yet. Last year, Luke Bryan introduced Garth Brooks live from Garth's concert in North Carolina. And so will Sam Hunt or Carrie Underwood or even Blake Shelton introduce someone else? That has yet to be seen.
When do the AMAs air and where can people vote?
Well, November 22nd, it airs live on the ABC network and people can vote at amavote.com. I already voted.
Okay. You got that message out there, so make sure you vote.
Yes.
Well, you can reach Nikki Strong on Twitter at @VOA_music or on Facebook at simply VOA Music. You can also catch Nikki Strong on Country Hits USA on VOA One. Thanks very much, Nikki.
Thank you.
I'm going to bring the good time home to you.
We'll have a house party. We don't need nobody. Turn your TV off. Break that boombox out. We'll wake up all the neighbors till the whole block hates us and the cops will show up and try to shut us down. If you're going to be a homebody, we're going to have a house party. If you want to be a homebody, we're going to have a house party. Throw a neon t-shirt over the lampshade. I'll take the furniture, slide it out of the way. Shaking the floor, rattling the roof. We'll go to town right there in your living room. Let's have a
That is House Party by Sam Hunt, who was among those nominated for this year's American Music Awards. Well, that's our show. Remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In its latest annual human rights report, the U.S. State Department has called attention to the Iranian government's practice of denying necessary medical treatment to certain prisoners. Ahmed Shahid, the U.N. Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in Iran, has also cited this violation, as have the U.N. Special Rapporteur on Torture and several human rights monitors. Political prisoners appear to be particular targets, and human rights organizations have highlighted particular cases of such abuse. On September 13th, labor activist Shahrokh Zamani died at the infamous Rajai Shahr prison in Karaj, where he was serving an 11-year sentence for his peaceful activities on behalf of workers. The International Campaign for Human Rights in Iran reported that he died from a stroke days after prison authorities refused him medical treatment. In August, journalist and human rights activist Narges Mohammadi was taken to a hospital in Tehran from Evin prison, where she is serving a 6-year sentence for alleged crimes against national security. Amnesty International reports that since August, Mohammadi, who has a history of seizures and loss of vision, has been denied treatment by a specialist, and even when prison doctors insisted she be hospitalized and stressed the need for further treatment, she was returned to prison. Omid Kokabi is a postdoctoral Iranian laser physicist at the University of Texas at Austin, who has been imprisoned since 2011 after returning to Iran to visit family. He is serving a 10-year prison term after being convicted on charges of communicating with a hostile government. He said he was jailed for refusing to cooperate with Iranian military projects. Recently, his mother wrote a letter to Iran's supreme leader calling for her son's freedom. She also noted that after 5 years in prison, her son is suffering from a series of medical maladies, including stomach and kidney ailments, for which he is being denied outside medical treatment despite the prison doctor's recommendation. In jailing these three citizens, the Iranian government has failed to uphold its own laws and international obligations that guarantee fundamental human rights. The denial of adequate medical care during their detention constitutes further and dangerous abuse. Iran must cease its denial of appropriate medical care for prisoners and, at a minimum, uphold basic international standards for their treatment.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.